troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Now, I have preached on this before, taught in Bible class, and I always think that it's very funny that a political ruler could be made so uneasy by the birth of a random baby in some country town. And I think that that does show us a note about how how fickle that politicians are, rulers are. They can be quite insecure, but people can be quite insecure. Now, let's just do this really fast as we move into it. What's not in the text? We know what's not there. We don't know the date. December 25th, my sister-in-law is from the Ukraine, and she said over there they celebrate the birth of Jesus on January 8th. I don't know about that one, but in America, Roman Catholics, they do December 25th. Well, the date's not in there. We don't know how many wise men came to the scene. It just says wise men. Three gifts were given, so people typically think one person brought a gift each. Yeah, we don't know a lot of stuff out of this story. How long was the labor? What were the baby's measurements? We don't know any of that stuff. And this is where that book, Hurlbut Story of the Bible, none of it's the point of the story. The point of the story is what we can make out of these two people, which would be Mary and Joseph, and the scene that they're having together. So when you're reading either Matthew chapter 2 or Luke chapter 2, I try to read texts as if it's the first time I'm ever reading it, which is kind of hard when you're raised up in Sunday school because you've heard them hundreds of times. But here's what I think of when I read Luke chapter 2, verses 1 and 6. This is a very uncomfortable scene. In Luke chapter 2, it says, It came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. Some people say that that would be better translated as there was a census. And his taxing was first made in the governor of Syria, when this man was the governor of Syria. And all went out to be taxed, everyone to his own city. And Joseph also went from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea into the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. We're getting pretty close to a period in our history where we're not going to be able to fully appreciate these stories. And a lot of them are that way. My family moved here in July, and in May, we traveled from Virginia to look at rental properties. And when it was May, my wife was 7 months pregnant. And this text says, being great with child, what I would say is my wife is big time pregnant. And we came down here, and I tell you, we get in a van, my parents came with us, and you get in this air-conditioned van, you travel together. It's not so bad when you're traveling together. But when you're 7 months pregnant, it's still uncomfortable. And the midwife told us, they said, you know, you need to stop every hour out of a 10.5-hour drive so that your wife can walk. Okay, maybe we're not going to stop every hour. But that's what they suggested. Yeah, but they're not even in a car. The whole thing is a walking, and someone says, well, you know, we see pictures where she's getting to ride a donkey. Any of y'all want to ride a donkey? See, that's what I'm saying. We're so far removed from how unpleasant this is. This is horrendous. And when you start thinking about the timing, you say, man, the timing of it all? I'm great with child, and we have to go from Galilee down to Judea to Bethlehem. This is awful timing. And you just sit and you stew, and you say, can't we get an exemption? Is there nothing that we can do where we'll participate, we'll just do it later? Well, you know, when you have a baby, you then have to go through postpartum period, so that's still going to be unpleasant. So here's the thing, y'all, that I look out of this and I basically say, these two, Mary and Joseph, we are going to do our civil duty, even if you are big time pregnant. That is something else. Now, there's a lot of talk right now, and it's been this way for decades, politics and religion. You know, you read the Bible and you find a lot of people are good, civil citizens. They're dedicated to being good neighbors. I think that's a biblical principle. There's a lot of Christians who don't vote. That's your business. But you know what you're going to do. You're going to pay taxes like the rest of us. So when you look at these type of texts and you say, look, they participated. This is the woman who's carrying the Son of God. This is the man who's going to overlook the Son of God until he's of age. And they're good civil citizens. You know, I think a big thing that's for us right now, and I don't have a problem, I tell you, I don't have a problem talking about politics from the pulpit. Everybody stays so wound up about national events, national, international. Do you know what I find with Christians? They're usually not that in tune with local happenings. That's odd to me. When I lived in Virginia and I was raised up there, I'd go to city council meetings, I'd write in the local newspaper. I was pretty in tune with what was going on because that was the stuff that affected me the most, is what was going on. I look at old newspaper articles. We're going to homeschool our kids. I was homeschooled. PTA meetings. There's a lot of people don't participate in PTA meetings, and that's where the meat is. And different things like school superintendents being on the school board and what have you. There's nothing wrong with Christians going after those type of offices. Now, you might get in that office and they tell you, we don't want to hear a sermon about water baptism. Well, you know what you can do? We're going to try to help these kids be respectful. We're going to try to help these kids get the best education they can do. And if I was in charge of any type of education sphere, I would be trying to get evolution out of the equation. Now, that's some pretty good stuff. But you look at the text and you just take a little note of it and say it this way. This is obviously the birth story. We're going to see it. But, you know, I'm also seeing some notes of being a good citizen in the community. And I think that's what they're doing. They got this going on. We're going to participate in it. Rome is in charge. They want to know how many people live in Judea. Well, they're doing a census. We'll participate in it. Now, here's the next one. Luke chapter 2, verse number 7. She brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. Even before we had kids, I always told people birthing is quite unpleasant to me. And before I saw my kids be born, I had a classmate talk about his wife giving birth and I'd start to sweat and I'd say, either you can stop talking about it or I gotta leave. And I just could not do it. Well, then, you know, everybody's different. My nephew's wife had their baby like it was nothing. And that was their first baby. Quick, just went in, had it. Yeah, but this, you're not in a hospital. And we didn't go to a hospital. My wife had both of our boys naturally with a midwife in a birth center, which is just a house that's been converted. And that first labor, because here's what I say, we don't know about the story. My first son's labor was 27 hours long. Y'all, I don't know y'all's babies. I didn't even deliver the boy, and that was rough. We were in there, and the midwives would go off, and I told my wife, they'd disappear for a while. And I said, I know what they're doing. I said, they're going off, they're taking naps, because they're doing it in cycles. One shows up, one goes away. And I said, they're not even offering me one. No naps. The pool was on a hardwood floor. I laid down on a hardwood floor, and I went away telling everybody. I said, I slept on a hardwood floor. She's giving birth, sure, but I'm sleeping on a floor, man. What were they doing? Do they have a midwife? Is it just Joseph? Again, this is where I say it's horrendous for me to think about these circumstances. And then it just says, there's no room in the inn. Okay, I hear you. There's no room in the inn. You don't see this big-time pregnant woman, like we say, about to pop. And you're just telling us there's no room in here? The word I would use is disgusting for humans to do this. No, we can't let you in here. Yes, we see that you're pregnant. The answer is still no. I can't believe it as I read this story after I've had two kids. And you have to, I look at this, and this is where I ask this question. Just no divine providential accommodations? What do I mean by that? Do we remember in the Old Testament story about Elijah? Elijah is on the run. He's in hiding from King Ahab. And he goes to a widow woman to be fed. Yeah, but do you know where he was getting his food before he had to go to the widow woman? The ravens were bringing him food. And this is, I read Luke 2, verse number 7, and I have to ask, if there was ever going to be some divine providence, why not now? We do have a room. You know what? We have one. Just in time. No, Then you look at Elisha, same story. Elisha is housed by a childless couple. He comes in, helps them, and then the couple says, we're going to add on a room just for you. Man, there's nobody they can turn to in Bethlehem and say, do you have one of these spare rooms? They call it a prophet's room. Hey, do you guys have a prophet's room where a prophet currently is not staying that we could borrow? Nothing. And it just, this story gets worse. If, how could it? It does. You birth your baby, going back to Matthew chapter 2. And in Matthew chapter 2, verse number 13, it says, when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise and take your child and his mother and flee into Egypt and be there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord of the prophets, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. Now, I do have to make another point here about being a good citizen and participating in civil events. This is where somebody reads that line in the red. Herod sought to kill the young child. And that's where somebody says, well, the government wouldn't hurt its own citizens. Yeah, I don't trust the government. I'm all for being a good neighbor. I vote, I do. You don't want to vote, that's your business. I'm for being a good citizen of this country, a good citizen of this country. Yeah, I still don't trust them. Either party. Someone says, there's other parties, besides those two, but I don't trust them either. Y'all, it's just people and power, and those things usually don't go very well together. And now you look at that text, and you know, it's also not just special to King Herod. In Roman history, Roman culture of that day, if you had a baby and you didn't want your baby, you know what you did? You just left your baby outside, and they called it exposure. So, and the Roman government said, that's all good and fine. So it wasn't just one government, it was both of them, whether you're Jews, whether you're Romans. And you have points like that, and I still stand by what I said about going to local government meetings and participating in all those things. I think that the Constitution is still good. The Republic is still good. We just have some things to iron out here and there. But here you are into this story, and you've got Mary and Joseph, and I'll talk about, you know, I wasn't really on board about having a midwife. What do I know about having a baby? But my wife said, I really want to use a midwife. So we start looking into it, and one of the things that the midwives really sell you on is that the day that you have your baby, you get to go home the same day. You could ask me, and I would have said, well, that's anybody that has a baby. It's not. So you have your baby, and you get to go home, and it's a big deal. Being in your own home is a big deal. And we all know that. You want to be in your bed. You want things to be where they're supposed to be, in your house. And you want all your comforts. And so you just deliver this baby. And now you have to go in and tell your wife, hey, we can't go back to Nazareth. We can't go back to Galilee. Well, where are we going? We're going to go even further south. And we're going into Egypt. Egypt? Now we're not even in Judea anymore. Y'all, we just left America. And you told your newborn, newly birthed wife, right? She just gave birth. You said, well, we got to go down into Mexico. No. No, we're not doing it. That's why I say this story is awful. But they do it. The government's out for your child. You got to go on an even further road trip. And you know, this is where I'm reading the story and I'm thinking to myself, why? This is a different Herod now. But you have to ask this question, why not just smite Herod dead like is going to happen to the Herod in Acts chapter 12? In Acts 12, it says, and upon a set day, Herod arrayed in royal, this is a different Herod, he arrayed in royal apparel, set upon his throne and made an oration unto them, and the people gave a shout, saying, it is the voice of a God and not of a man. And immediately the angels of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. Now, I'm just saying, isn't if we're going to be striking people dead, wasn't this an opportune time to do it? You got a Herod who wants to kill the baby Jesus, but he doesn't get smote. We just have to flee into Egypt. Now let's go through these, just rehearse them one more time. These are Mary's misfortunes. I had this baby out on the road. We're traveling. Not great. I had this baby in a manger. Not great. You know what my... Some people hear that part of the story in the manger and they say, well, that's just how people lived back then. I don't know about that. My own grandmother, when she heard that my wife gave birth with no medicine in a house, my own grandmother, who's close to 90 years old, said, mm-mm, that's for barn animals. My 90-year-old grandmother expects some medicine. So you have a natural birth in a manger, and then you say, and I was unable to take my baby home because the government wanted to kill him. Now, I think that this story doesn't get a lot of attention, like I said, because of the December 25th controversy, Roman Catholicism controversy, and I'm not a Roman papist. But when I sit down and I read the story, this is what I see. If there was ever a person who could have complained about a lack of divine intervention, it was Mary. She could have easily said, I have the incarnation in my womb. Can I get some help over here? Now, sometimes we see lines like that, and this is where people say, no, Mary wouldn't even think about saying such a thing. Sure she would, because I do, and you do too. Y'all, we all have these type of thoughts where we say, where is God? What's God? And let's be honest now. God knows we're thinking these things, and you say, well, maybe I don't pray that way. You don't have to pray that way for God to know you're thinking it. Can I get some help over here? And you know what I also think? I think if anybody had a right to complain, it was her. But this is also what I think. I think the lesson for us is that sometimes life is just hard. And there's nothing to it. There is no rhyme or reason. It's just life. And it's that way for almost everybody. This is what 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9 says. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. And then this in verse number 9. Verse number 9, in my opinion, is not as popular as the roaring lion verse. Whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Now, the Bible class hour that we had an hour ago, you're going to suffer. And it doesn't matter, like you say, well, I had a really good run as a Christian where nothing bad was ever happening, and then I woke up today and it just kind of seemed like the sky was falling. Well, I guess that's just how life works. And that is how life works. Some people get beat up quite a bit, and some of us make it on a pretty good, smooth run. But you're gonna have something. The same afflictions, and I talked about this last week, you know, I said about road rage. You're driving down the road and you're angry because you got all this stuff going on. Everybody's angry. And everybody's got something going on. You got loved ones that are sick. You're sick. I'm sick. I got a doctor's appointment coming up. And you know what the hurdle is? Well, is your insurance going to cover it? Doesn't matter whether you need the medicine or not. Is your insurance going to cover it? So we all got it. And that's the moment where we just say, and it does nothing to be mad at God. Because now you got problems and you're mad at God. And you might just say, once I start getting mad at God, I'm probably going to get mad at my wife and my kids. And I asked last week if we all knew an expression. Does everybody know the expression, kicking the cat? Whatever, you come home, kick the cat. And I'm saying, my little boy can be the cat. So it just does nothing for us to get angry. Everybody's going through the same afflictions. You know, my dad died in August. And I just saw the other day where my friend's mom died. We're all going through it. And, you know, a good thing about having friends, you kind of start going through those things together. When you're real, real old, that's when I hear people say, all my friends are dying. But when you're at a point like I am in your life, that's where all your friends and your parents start dying. And you kind of go through it together. And I did have this note that I really wanted to plug in here. Yeah, I don't really get mad at God. What I tend to get upset with is with other Christians who know how hard life is, and then they don't help you. Because, I mean, we're all, you know, saying, well, if God wanted to, he could just move heaven and earth. He could. It typically just doesn't work. Even in the Bible, there's a lot of hardship in the Bible where people aren't getting divine intervention. But you know what I don't understand is the Christians who know that life is hard, and then they just don't extend. Which again, back to the Bible class. You know what happens when you get involved with people? Boy, you get involved with folk and you say, let me now carry your stress on top of my stress. And it doesn't always work both ways. Sometimes it's just a one-way road. You start trying to share your load with somebody else and they say, I can't be carrying that with you. But we're all dealing with it. And that's what I get out of the story. Mary and Joseph having to make that hard travel with a newborn. And you just say, look, that's just life sometimes. Here's Ecclesiastes 9:11. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to them all. Sometimes these things just hit you. There's no rhyme or reason to it. You know, some things are from our lack of diligence. And then sometimes we are on the ball, we are on top of it, and then boom, it still comes and gets us. And you read these type of things all over the Bible. In Job 13:15, though he slay me, yet will I trust him, but I will maintain my own ways before him. And this is what Job said. Look, God could kill me. I'm going to keep trusting God. And that's where we all have to be, whatever it might be. And you know, you have these conversations with you and you go through it and you try to figure it out. And I'll tell you, that point in the Bible class was very, very valuable when our brother said to get involved with people. So, you know, part of getting involved with people is letting them tell you their stories. And you get to learn vicariously through their stories. And what our tendency is to do is to say, I don't have time for that right now. Well, that story might just come in handy later and help you when you're actually in those same circumstances. How did you deal with that? What did you do? And I think that it might be the thing that we need help with the most is just dealing with our friends and loved ones dying. We had a family friend. This doesn't go across the board. It doesn't work for everybody. We had a family friend and her husband had a heart attack while he was bush hogging a pasture, and it ran over him. And they were Christians. Everybody in that story is a Christian. So when she went to the hospital, he was already dead. But their friend, who happened to be the preacher of that congregation, he would not let her go into that room. I'm like, physically, bodily, he restrained her. He said, do not go in there. I said, you can't do anything about it. But years later, she said, I always regretted that. You listen to the man and say, I just look as a man, I couldn't let that woman go in there and see her man look like that. But then women hear that story and they say, you know, I think I still might would have wanted to see him one more time. And you pick up these things from everybody's stories. And so, one, and it's valuable because you might think right now is not the time for me to tell that story and you just don't know. Maybe sometimes not. But I will tell you that in August when my dad died, my dad killed himself. And he had depression all of his adult life. And I knew that he did. But this man that I hardly even knew, my dad just rented an office from this guy named Roy. I only bumped into Roy twice. But Roy saw me walking down the street. Dad had just died. I had to go back to Virginia. Did the funeral, you know, just went through it with my mother and my sister. And I was walking down the street, and Roy saw me out of his window, and Roy came running out, and he started talking with me. And he just said, you know, he said, this is hard. And he said, and it doesn't make sense. And he said, but I would encourage you not to, he said, don't try to come down on any positions right away. And then he told me, he said, years ago when I was a kid, he said, my parents, this is mountainous Appalachian area. He said, when I was a kid, my parents had a cabin up in the mountain. And he said, my dad went out to the grocery store or went to work. Either way, the cabin caught on fire. And he said, and my mom died in the cabin fire. And he said, but me and my brother, we lived, we got out. And he said, my mother, she died in the fire. And he said, and my dad was always depressed after that. And he said, and I never understood my dad. He said, because if you looked at him, he had a lot of stuff going for him. But that one thing, the cabin and my mother dying. And so he said, my dad sent me, the man goes out as a child, he said, my dad sent me to the grocery store to pick something up. He said, when I came back, my dad had killed himself. And he said, I never understood it. And he's sharing that with me because he knew my circumstances. And he said, this is why I encourage you to not come down too quick on any opinions. He said, I never understood my dad. He said, then when I was 60 years old, my wife died. And he said, then I started feeling depressed. And he said, then I understood my dad. And he said, I get it. Now, I hardly know Roy from Adam, but I sure appreciate Roy coming out and telling me that story. And I think that's why we are here together. We're enduring things together. We're helping each other go along. And that's why I go back to Joseph and Mary. I mean, it just seems like there was nobody there with them. And I think that's another part of it too, is sometimes you're not going to have anybody with you. And it does nothing for us just to roll over and die. You just keep plugging along. And here's one more, Proverbs 13:15. Everybody is having a hard life. Life is hard. Life is tough. But it can be a lot harder. The way of the transgressor is hard, Proverbs 13:15. It's a lot harder, though, when you're not following God. Man. And I tell you, this idea of looking at what people are doing. When I lived in Virginia, I lived right across the street from a convenience store, which typically was cigarettes, lottery, and beer. But I watched this man one day, and I said this to my dad. My dad had a crazy, crazy young life. I didn't. But I watched this man. I mean, it wasn't even 10 in the morning yet. It was actually probably not even like 8:30 in the morning yet. And this man walked from down the road to the convenience store, comes out with a brown bag. And I said to my dad, like 8:30 in the morning? He goes, oh, yeah. And I said, 8:30 in the morning, though. And he said, yeah, nothing to it. And I said, that makes me feel like he went to bed thinking about that, and that's just going to be my next thing. And he said, probably. Y'all, that's a tough existence. It's not good, but I do think that's why I believe in evangelism, is to extend to folk, help them out of those circumstances and say, you know, nobody's promising you a cakewalk if you become a Christian, but you can be saved and we can start implementing some character ideas that'll make things a lot better. One more, we'll be done. When I read the story of Mary, I also have to tell myself things can substantially get worse. How? How could things have gotten worse in that story? Well, we have to jump a little bit ahead from that story. It's not exactly in the birth, but man, you have this horrible birth story, and then you stand at the cross and watch all these people kill your 30-year-old son. And we read these texts, and I don't know how she did it. How do you go to the crucifixion? Isn't that the time where you say, I must stay home? Isn't that the moment where you tell everybody, you know, my son's been telling everybody for at least the past year he's going to raise from the dead. I think I'll just skip that. And she doesn't. She's there. There stood by the cross of Jesus, his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Cleophas, Mary Magdalene. And when Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciples standing by whom he loved, he said unto his mother, woman, behold thy son. There are some people in the world who have bad mothers. But there are some people in the world who have really good mothers, and they probably don't appreciate them like they should. So, appreciate your mothers. Tell them you love them. Be respectful to them. You keep growing up and you start figuring out your parents didn't know half of what you thought they knew. They're figuring it out as they go along, just like we all who are 30 are figuring it out as we go along. But it can always get worse. My dad died in August. You know how it could have been worse? My mother could have died in August. Oh, loads of things could have happened in August. And I do tell you too, it's reading my Bible and the Bible class, Hebrews 11, Hebrews 12, to where I said to my wife recently, my dad dies in August, I said, you know, I still count myself as someone who's living a very good life. It just so happens my dad died in August. Now, a lot of people, a lot of good Christian people helped me have that thought process. The Bible helped me have that thought. It could be so much worse. So much worse. And we all have to think in those terms. Now, when things start getting real, real bad, it's going to be difficult for all of us to keep that mind. Because, you know, somebody in this room, we leave and someone says, I can remember that guy came on a Sunday and said, things can be worse. And you say, I think I'm at worse. And I don't know it could get any worse. Well, I'll be praying for you. And I don't mean that in any type of, you know, flippant way. I'm going to pray for you when things start getting worse. And I hope that you're praying for each other and for me when things get worse. Now, you take those two things together and you put them together. The manger scene and the cross. Those are two stories that prove Jesus' divinity. The virgin birth, the resurrection from the dead. And we got a lot of people who do not believe in those two things. But in 1 Timothy 3:16, they get put together. Without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh. That's his birth through Mary. Justified in the Spirit, seen of angels, preached unto the Gentiles, believed on in the world, and received up into glory. That's his resurrection and ascension. And here's one more. 1 Corinthians 15:1-4, Paul says, Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel, which I preached unto you, which also you received, and wherein you stand, by which also you are saved, if you keep in memory what I have preached unto you, unless you have believed in vain. For I delivered unto you first, which I also received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, he was buried, and that he rose again on the third day according to the Scriptures. Now, I will have another moment with you about when I preached my dad's funeral. My mother's dad is super emotional. And when I was a kid, I just thought it was the silliest thing that Pappy would cry over everything. Yeah, I inherited Pappy's emotions. And so I cry almost over everything. And I preached my dad's funeral without breaking down. And I just talked about my dad's a Christian. I'm a Christian. I said, I'm very confident I'm going to see my dad again. And I told y'all recently about my brother-in-law who's not a Christian. My brother-in-law's brother, so my sister's brother-in-law, he was a mess. He just crying all over the place. And he had known my dad, you know, since we were all kids and whatnot. But he wasn't close with my dad. And he hugs my sister real big, and he's crying, and he's not a Christian by any type of anybody's shape or standards. And he hugs my sister, and he says, I am glad that you all have your faith. And I have to think that he recognized he doesn't have one. And I have to think that he's actually having some internal monologue to say, what am I going to be doing with myself when I find myself in these circumstances? Now, if you're here this morning, you're not a Christian, I would like to make a sales pitch for you that being a Christian does help you through hard times. It doesn't keep the hard times from coming, but it helps you keep your head on your shoulders. That's a very big deal. Everything's falling apart around you doesn't mean that you have to. You might say, well, you're doing all right for now, Caleb. We'll see how you do in two. Wait, I'm with you. We'll see how I'm doing in 2 or 3 years. But that's where I say, I hope you'd be praying for me. It'll help you through your hard times, and it'll take you to heaven. What else could you be asking for? 1 Corinthians 4:15. He said, I have begotten you through the gospel. Acts 18:8, these are the Corinthians. Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all of his house, and many of the Corinthians hearing believed, and they were baptized. This morning you're not a Christian, you say, I believe that Jesus did have that virgin birth, and I believe that he was crucified and he rose from the dead. Well, then you need to be baptized. You're basically saying, I want him to be my Savior. I want to live a Christian life. I want to go to heaven. Well, that's what they did when they heard the message, and that's what I'd encourage you to do this morning. If you haven't been baptized into Christ, then what would you be waiting on? We're all going to die. Maybe not sooner than later. Who knows? But it's helping you through this life, and then it takes you to the next one. Here's our final slide. Paul wrote this to the Romans. Know ye not that so many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death? Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. You can begin a new life as a Christian, you'll be a child of God, and you will be, hopefully, happy on your way to heaven. If you are a Christian, you say, well, I have some repenting that I need to do. Well, that's good that you're being honest about it. And you look at these different type of stories, maybe you say, I've been angry with God, and I say, now it does no good for me to be angry with God. Well, you can change in the pew. You can just start thinking differently about God and seeing His goodness in various ways. This morning, in whatever way we can assist you, let us do it as we stand and sing this song together.